Accession number 27189, Real 9.
Colonel Poulson, Real 9. You'd had three years at Home Guard School running courses. What happened to you after that? What was the next thing that happened?
After that, I was posted to the 1st Infantry Division as Operation Officer 3-3.
Now that's a staff appointment, isn't it?
It was my first staff appointment.
Had you been?
I learned quite a lot. A lot there.
Had you been to the staff college?
No.
So does this mean?
I hadn't been to the staff college, but I spent 1 year at Fort Benning in Georgia at the infantry school, infantry advanced course, I think it was.
When was that?
Was when I was at the infantry school. 51, I think. Nearly 51.
What impression did you get of the Americans from your time at Fort Benning?
Very hardworking. Very friendly, charming people. I got my wife over there, my daughter, so we had a very nice time there. But Fort Benning was a hell of a large place. More like a Norwegian silke. No, it was interesting. But very large classes. I think more than 100 in one class. Much of the examination was true and false and multiple choice and that kind of thing.
Yes. How did their style of infantry work compare to the Norwegian style of infantry work?
And more or less the same, I think. We learned quite a lot from America at that time. After a while, we got American weapons and so on. Quite a number of officers went to America for staff training. And England, yes.
I was going to say, does this mean that you were losing the British connection because you were getting American equipment rather than British?
I think that's right, yes. More or less.
And do you remember what was on the syllabus that you followed at Fort Benning?
No. It's a long time ago.
Yeah. But
what kind of stuff work?
You were saying that you'd been to Fort Benning and that was a preparation for being a G3, so presumably you did learn staff procedures at...
Well, I wasn't. I learned quite a lot as G3 at the 1st Division. I don't think I've ever been a very good staff officer. But at the First Division, well, it's okay. I was there from 57 to 61.
Where was the First Division headquarters?
It's south of Oslo, in Ski. It's the headquarters.
What was the First Division's mobilisation role? What would it have done in the event of war breaking out?
They were employed. It would have been employed here in the southern part of Norway.
So
at least initially. air landing or a coastal attack in Østfold or Vestfold.
So the defence of southern Norway in general was...
To defence southern Norway.
Yeah.
The Østlandet.
Were there any particular areas that were especially sensitive that were vital to be protected?
Østfold and Vestfold. Most of our planning was for defence in these areas. And at that time, all large exercises in the southern part of Norway was run by the 1st Division. So I got quite a lot of experience there, how to run brigade manoeuvres and so on.
So you were a training headquarters and an operational headquarters
yes,
at the same
yes,
time?
Yes.
What would the strength of the division have been on mobilisation, if you'd called up all
your...
How big would the division have been? What strength if it had been mobilised?
Three brigades.
Would they all have been local?
Yes, the brigade. Yeah, what do you mean by local?
Would the recruits have been from the south of Norway? So
yes.
Yeah, so you'd have been made. You know, how long would it have taken you to get mobilised, do you think?
Well, the units would have been mobilised in two days or something.
Yes.
That's all. Or sooner, better to get them together and being able to work as a brigade. That would have taken a little longer. Well, not exactly. I'm rather amazed. The Norwegian mobilization system was quite a good system, you know. And we were... In a couple of days, you could mobilize a brigade with all the logistic which is needed, and you would have been able to fight. Not very well in the beginning, but at least they were a military unit and I could fight.
And do something.
Well, then it's rather amazing. I think.
Did you have plans for integrating the Home Guard into your defence schemes? Were they part
of the...
They would have come under the command of the division.
Yes.
What were they going to do? What was their specific task?
The Home Guard at that time, the first task was to secure the mobilisation places. As guard, they were going to protect bridges and all that kind of thing.
Guarding vital points.
Guarding vital points. Yeah.
Who was going to defend Oslo? Was that part of your brief as well, to protect the capital?
Yeah. Except from school, the only unit in Oslo was in his message, the King's Guard.
Do you remember if your plans for defence, were they based upon the idea of holding position, holding vital ground, or were they based upon the idea of making counterstrokes against the enemy when he'd landed?
It all depended on how much time you had. Was this a sudden attack, or had they had any forewarning? It all depended on that. But when I was at the 1st Division, I spent a year in Gaza.
Ah, yes, you must come on to that. But, did you think that there was... I mean, at that time, this is late 1950s, early 60s, did people think there was a serious risk of an invasion of Norway? Was it considered a likelihood or merely a possibility?
Well, I think so. At least that what was we were preparing for.
Mm.
From the east.
From the east.
Either up north or through the belts up against the eastern part of Norway. Mm.
A lot would depend, wouldn't it, upon how the Finns and the Swedes behaved?
Sure, yes.
Did you have expectations about that?
At my level, I didn't know much about that.
How was it that you got sent to Gaza? What happened to send you to Gaza?
I was asked if I would like to command the Danor battalion in the United Nations Emergency Force in Gaza. The Danor battalion was a Danish-Norwegian battalion. Half of it was Norwegian, the other half was Danish. This was quite a very interesting job, indeed. It was a rather peaceful time when I was there. You had those people crossing the Adil, was that the name of the boundary? The armistice demarcation.
The armistice demarcation.
Atlantic line.
Yes. How was that line shown? Was there a fence or a barrier of any kind?
No. That's what I can remember. And we also had a guard at Sharm el-Sheikh. And that's rather interesting. Sharm el-Sheikh at that time was no people living there. It was a few houses. And today it's a large town.
What was your job in the battalion? Were you a company commander?
I was commander of the battalion.
Oh, the whole battalion?
The whole battalion.
Oh. Had you had anything to do with the Danes before?
Pardon?
Had you had anything to do with the Danes before?
No.
How did you find commanding Danes? How did they carry
on? We were very, very different. I liked the Danes very much, but I very much more like the Prussian than we were. At that time, you couldn't. In Norwegian soldier, you can come to the battalion commander and say, "Do you?" In the Danish army, that was an offense. You said "de." We had "du." That's more personal and friendly, and you have "de," which we also use in this country for a very long time. So you had to, as a battalion commander, I had to put my finger in the ground and sniff. How am I going to tackle this or this situation? Yeah, I had no problem at all. I had my second in command. He was a Danish major, and he was very loyal. And so, but all the time you had to have in the back of your mind that you were having two nationalities, then you had to always think of that, how to treat people.
Did you have to be more formal with the Danish soldiers?
Yes.
Did the soldiers from the two from the different contingents, did they mix well?
Yes, I think so. Yes. We mixed well.
How was the battalion deployed in Gaza?
We had the our job was to guard the demarcation line.
The perimeter.
A certain part of the demarcation. So we had forward platoon camps along the demarcation lines, the number of, what do you call it, posts?
Posts. Mm. Observation posts.
Observation posts. Mm. Two men in observation post. It was very interesting. I learned a lot. But we never operated as companies or battalion. Well, today, they say that all the units we are having in Bosnia or Afghanistan or wherever they are, you should pull them home and they are going to fight in Norway. That's no bloody nonsense. You can't train in... with a lot of... But they do quite a different thing.
Of course. What was going on in Gaza at the time? Was it... You said it was peaceful. Was there any sign of trouble or potential trouble while you were there?
Not very much. A few incidents of firing over the boundaries and so on. But that was rather peaceful. Yes.
Who were you reporting to? Who was your next level up?
The commander of the emergency force was an Indian General Gayani.
How did you get on with him?
You had a Swedish battalion, you had a Yugoslavian battalion, you had a Brazilian battalion, or you had a, something else.
What was General Gayani like to work for?
He was a charming one, easy to work for. And he had a staff. They were Americans, they were Danes there was all kinds of nationalities in his staff. And we had an Indian battalion there.
How did
they were very British.
More British than the British?
Oh, much more. And I remember very well on a visit, battalion commander came with all the photography. Far back, pointed to British and Indian. The British officer who had commanded the battalion was very proud of that, what he told me.
And he'd taken over that battalion.
And they had bagpipes and... They were more British than the British.
Do you remember what battalion they were? What sort of, what Indian regiment they were?
No, I don't remember. Mm. The second in command was a Sikh, I remember. Oh. Well, never... It was a very well disciplined and good battalion.
Did General Gayani come round to visit you regularly?
Or? No, he didn't.
He didn't.
Mm. He didn't. And Nehru had a visit from Nehru.
He came to see you?
Yes.
What, do you remember what he was interested in particular?
No, I think he was most interested in to visit Gayani and the Indian battalion.
How did the logistics work for this operation while you were in Gaza?
Bad.
Bad. What went wrong?
The United Nations didn't have any organization for that kind of thing. Oh. And I had a civilian who was in charge of it. And it took months to get a small car had broken down to get that thing replaced. It took a hell of a long time. Yeah. So much of the all the equipment come from the different countries who took part in the operation.
Were you able to get a line of communication back to Norway to get what you needed?
Yes. Unofficially, we did that.
So you had an unofficial line of communication? Unofficial logistics?
Yes.
Who managed to sort that out for you? Did you have a particular friend back in...
I think that was had been used for quite a number of years.
Oh, it was in place already?
Yes.
Yeah. Were your... platoon camps and were your posts, were they defended or were they open?
Open.
They're open.
They're open. Yeah, I mean, you had guards, but we hadn't made any preparation for defense of the company battalion area. But the platoons out in the desert and whatever it is, was different.
Were they defended then, the platoons in the desert? Did they have...
They had plans for how to...
They did?
To defend themselves.
Had they dug defences and put out wire or anything like that? Or
no.
So it was just plans, not actuality? Mm.
Those were very peaceful time.
How did you get over...
They were not allowed to cross over to Israel.
You weren't?
No.
What relations did you have with the local population?
Good. Very good. So after that I got back to the division. And soon after I was ordered to take over His Majesty the King's Guard.
Huh. Was that a surprise posting?
What do you mean by a surprise?
Well, had you expected to be posted to King's Guard?
No, I had the slightest idea. Mm. So I spent 5 years as commander of the King's Guard. It was a very interesting time. Especially for my wife.
What were the main duties, you know, commanding
the main
King's
duties?
Guard? Yes.
Was what you see every day, mounting guard at Slotte, what is it? King's Skaugum.
The palace.
And Akershus. But when I took over, well, my commander at the 1st Division, he was the operational commander the next level over the guard. But when I took over, we were supposed to be doing escorting duties. But that was stopped, and we got an operational order for the fence.
Oh. What would you have defended?
Well, may I say the fence? You asked if you had any... It all depended Is this an airborne attack? Is it coming up to from the south, from the coast and so on? But we're going to be an operational avdeling, fighting, not escorting members of the government and whoever it is from yet to be. And I was very happy with that.
Who actually drew up the plans for defence? Was that you yourself for defending those particular areas?
More or less, yes.
Did the King's Guard have any heavy weapons in support?
We had heavy mortars. Mm. I mean, we had the ordinary 3 inches mortars, but we had also the American heavy mortars, 4.2 or whatever it is.
4.2 inch, yes.
What?
4.2 inch?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
What was it? Quite a large thing.
Did you exercise those defence plans? Did you actually practice doing them?
No. To be commander of the King's Guard was a very interesting job. I mean, you had all the ceremonial and a hell of a lot of head of states visiting and so on. But and the main thing, I mean, the order to the guard was to all the ceremonial and all the guarding at the palace and wherever it was going to be perfect. But nobody could come and tell me to do anything else. All depend on time. So I did more or less what I liked. And I was very interested in two things: weapon training and winter training. And I think when it comes to winter training, I think I could put into effect many of my ideas. So each year I took one company and went up to the Hardangervidda Plateau and crossed the Vidda for 1 week without any vehicles, without any possibility to get fresh food or anything else. Everything we needed was carried on, you carried on your back or pulling a toboggan. I made up my own ration.
What went into it?
The reason I did that was because I didn't get the money to use the ordinary field ration. That's what I mean. You have one box of what we artichoke fresk, they called in reserve ration for the soldier. This meat, fat, and what have you. We used potato flakes with it, biscuits, soup, no butter, oatmeal, to make porridge, sugar, chocolate, dried milk. I think that was. What's the thing? But that also took live ammunition with me.